From Ram Dass Speaks, Volume 2. Question. For the purpose of getting concentration, is it possible to combine the method of japa, which you teach, to the method which Sri Aurobindo advocates? Ram Dass. What is that method? Question. What I exactly mean is whether the object which can be attained by following your method and by Sri Aurobindo's method is the same. Ram Dass. His method and Ram Dass' method do not seem to be different because what he teaches is complete surrender to the divine power. Ram Dass also teaches the same thing. By continuous remembrance of God, your ego sense disappears and you surrender yourself to the divine will and power by which you know that you, as an individual, are not doing anything by yourself. But a divine power that pervades the entire universe is responsible for all of your activities, mental and physical. What Sri Aurobindo calls Shakti Upasana, or worship of the divine power, is the same as surrender to the divine will by continuous repetition of God's name. Repetition of God's name is a means employed for the eradicating the ego sense. When the mind continuously remembers God, ego sense has no place in you. Your mind merges into the superconscious state, and your actions then are not done by you, but by the divine power that is dwelling within you. This takes you to the sublime teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. Relinquishing all dharmas, take refuge in me alone. I will liberate thee from all sins. Grieve not. This means that abandoning everything, you must take him as your supreme goal. God in you is making you do everything, and you as an individual doer do not exist. Question. Sri Aurobindo teaches that self-surrender can be effected only gradually, and I suppose that goes without saying. But there must be, at the same time, a decisive turn taking place in us. Should we think of that turn as something happening, or should we simply concentrate on God and leave it to Him to do as He thinks best for us in His own time? Ram Dass. What we have to do is to aspire for God. When this aspiration becomes intense, God helps in our progress, and by His grace lifts us up and absorbs us into His all-inclusive, all-transcendent Supreme Being. I think it's interesting, this notion of surrender to God versus individual will, because many people, without having had the actual experience, get confused. Should I exercise my own will, or is it all God's will and His grace? And what you might say when you come into that state of realization is that they are one and the same thing, but at the time, we don't fully appreciate it. We don't know it. What we're primarily aware of is our own individual will, our own individual decision-making process. We can decide and choose to put our mind upon God, or we can choose to put our mind upon this world. And when we put our mind on God, Papa recommended the chanting of God's name, and surely that is a wonderful, powerful practice. It is one of the great tools that have been handed to us. But what the Vedas say and what the great spiritual masters also say is that, speaking as God, you could not think of me if I did not think of you first. And so this is a great principle that you come to realize when you are lifted up into higher states of consciousness. But in the beginning, you are not aware of. You only think, I am aspiring for God, I desire God, I wish to have more of God consciousness. Without fully appreciating, that is God who is willing that through your own mind, through your own emotional being, through your own willpower. And when that intensifies through your own choice of actions as you perceive it at that time. It generates greater and greater power. This greatness of concentration then opens the door wide for God's grace to be able to come in and operate. Now, it's not as if God's grace is not coming to you previously, and now suddenly it is. God's grace is always pouring to you. It is His grace that you should be uplifted. It is His grace that you should be transformed. But He is a respecter of individual wills. If you approach somebody's home and you knock on the door and no one answers, generally you don't break in. That would be considered disrespectful, unless you suspected something may be wrong with the person. But as long as they don't open the door, neither do you enter in. And God, being a respecter of persons, also acknowledges when our doors are closed to Him. Now, it's confusing and confounding to the mind that consciously we can be asking and wanting God to be able to come in. We feel we're in a state of misery. We feel that we're in a state of separation. And that because of that, we want God to come in. We want to have that God experience. And yet at the same time, there are those forces right within our own conscious and unconscious mind that is keeping that door shut. It is a fear. It is a feeling of lack of worthiness. It is a sense of being overwhelmed at God's greatness, that we think that we cannot survive such experience or we don't deserve such an experience. And thus we keep the door closed. I say to you now that all of God's grace is waiting to pour into you, to lift you up into His bliss, into His divine presence, as soon as you open that door. But you may say, but I want that door open, but it doesn't seem to open. And that is because another part of you wants it closed. We're not one whole being yet. And so a part of what our spiritual practice is recovering and orienting every part of ourselves in one whole continuous self that aspires and wants God only. When you align all of your interior consciousness to this state of mind, then God will quickly do the work that lifts you up into His divine sense of being. And this is the great work that we all have to do. And so the more that we bring our concentration of our conscious mind and our awareness of our conscious mind to this, then the more we are able to become transformed. I'd also like to read to you from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And this is Swami Satchidananda's, he translated much of this, and these are the different verses that were favorites of his. And this is entitled The Glory of Satsang. And this is about Lord Krishna and his great devotee, Uddhava. The glorious Lord, continuing his advice to his ardent disciple and eager listener, Uddhava, said, Satsang, the company of enlightened ones, helps the devotee to break all attachments. Satsang is more helpful than the practice of yoga consisting of the eight limbs enumerated in the scriptures. Even the Sankhya, the knowledge of the distinctive character of different categories of creation as discussed in the Sankhya system of philosophy, the study of Vedas, chanting of God's name, austerity and renunciation, practice of ritualistic worship, pilgrimages and humanitarian service are not so helpful to the devotees as satsang. In the company of saints, innumerable persons, even the lowest born possessing rajasic and tamasic dispositions, have ascended to my realm in different times. Many of them never studied the scriptures, had not observed austerities, but they could attain me only through the fellowship of saints. Through mere love for me and my company, the gopis accomplished the object of their life. When I was taken to Mathura along with Balaram by Akura, The gopis felt most miserable. Their mind was attached to me through intense devotion, and separation from me was unbearable as they did not look upon anyone else than me as a source of delight. The very autumnal nights of indescribable sweetness of the rasa dance were spent by them like seconds because they were with me, the highest object of their love, whereas in my absence, the very nights hung heavy on them like ages. With their mind fastened onto me with words of love, they were not conscious of their own people or even their own self. Then where was the question of their being conscious of the world? Full of love for me and thinking of me only, the thousands of gopis who did not even know my essential divine character attained me, the supreme Brahman. Therefore, O Uddhava, turn your back upon all injunctions and interdictions, renounce worldly activity as well as the cessation from activity, reject all that has been learnt by you and which has yet to be learnt, and then seek me alone as your refuge. I am the one self of all the embodied creatures. For with me alone as your master, you can be rid of fear from all quarters. This is a tremendous teaching. Now, there are Vaishnavites in India who think of Krishna primarily as his physical incarnation, and they put great stock that he was the greatest of incarnations, etc. And, in truth, it would be hard to argue with them on any of those points. However, the Krishna of the physical manifestation is just a small portion of the divine principle that he embodies and represents. When we sit at the feet of the Guru, we may do so in the physical sense. When I first met Mother, I did not know anything about her. I did not know anything about Paramahansa Yogananda or the Guru lineage. I only knew that it was recommended that I should come and see her. And I was seeking at the time, and I was in great spiritual pain. And when I was in her presence, I felt such power of God in her. I felt such an upliftment of mind. And it was not that all of my doubts were resolved. I was approximately 2 years in resolving doubt after doubt. And finally, every time that I would come and I would see Mother, and I would think, will it be the same? Will I feel the same upliftment? Will I feel the same power of God in her? And true enough, I did every single time. I didn't see Mother outside of service. I didn't even know that I could call her. I didn't know she had a telephone number, nothing. And so I came to Bonnie's and I saw Mother there. And this was the great thrill of my life, really. And yet I did have doubts. I wondered, well, is she teaching the truth? I haven't realized it myself, but I feel this tremendous power. And I had gone to see other teachers. I could compare her to others. In fact, I remember seeing Yogi Bhajan before I saw Mother. And then I didn't think that much of him when I saw him the first time. And then I met Mother, and then I knew when I was living in Bellingham, he was coming to Vancouver. So I drove up with a few other people to see him, and I was curious in my mind, how would it feel being in his presence now, once I had met Mother? And it paled into insignificance. In fact, I had a most negative psychic experience with him, and it was Mother who surrounded me in light when I thought of her that saved me from that experience. So not only was I nonplussed, I was positively rejecting that kind of path. And later on, I came to know that he exercised powers at different times that he tried to exercise on me. I felt him rummaging around in my consciousness. He had stopped when he was walking out. He turned and looked towards me, and there was a division in the group. So that there was like an alleyway that was pointing right towards me, and he held my eyes, and he looked at me, and I could feel him rummaging around inside of my consciousness on the psychic realm. And I didn't like it, and I recognized the difference. I felt I had felt Mother deep inside of me, but I had never felt invaded by her. And I definitely felt invaded by Yogi Bhajan. And so I thought of Mother, and immediately this white light descended down all around me. And as soon as that happened, his head snapped around and he kept walking out. I guess he recognized he wasn't going to get anywhere with me in that way, and that Mother was protecting me. And so I was able to compare Mother's experience, the experience I had with Mother, with others. And I didn't find anybody who ever came even close to the purity and the power and the uplifting power that she had within my soul. But she always uplifted me, not into her human self, but into her divine self. And this is a great, great difference in a fully realized master. It is something that distinguishes a real master from anyone else. Because for anyone else, there's going to be a human ego there. Now, it's not to say that Mother didn't operate through an ego, but she used that ego. And it was an open doorway into God. And that's the way it is when the mind is united with God. But before that happens, it's like a closed door, and you can come to a wonderful personality. Perhaps they're a saintly personality. But nevertheless, they are not an open doorway into God as of yet that is unimpeded, because there is still attachment, there is still a human consciousness that has not fully surrendered itself to God. This surrender to God that Papa talks about has to be whole, it has to be complete, without any reservation, and this is not an easy thing to do. Tests come. Tests come from the guru. Tests comes from this world. And we think that we're doing all right and we're feeling uplifted and we're feeling on our Godward path. And suddenly something comes along and we attach ourselves to an idea, to a desire nature, to something, and it begins to pull at us. And we have to recognize it right off. If we start to play with any kind of desire nature at all, it will gain. Particularly if we have any past kind of karmic connection with that. And it will start to pull at us, and pretty soon it will seem to be an irresistible force. And we're taken down that path, and we can be taken into complete separation from God and from Guru. And this is a terrible, terrible thing when it happens. We don't always recognize it as terrible. I remember that a mother was talking to her teenage children. And she says, you'll hear from other people that drugs are bad. And you may infer from that that they feel bad. She says, that's not the problem. The problem is they feel good. But they're not good for you. They're bad for you. But they'll pull you, they'll entice you, they'll want to draw you into their power. And you'll want to be drawn into their power. She had told them that when she first had an experience in drugs, she recognized she could never do that again because she wanted to do more of it. Isn't that a wonderful purity of consciousness to have in that moment? That you can recognize that something is pulling on you. It's pulling too hard on you. And it's not God. It's something else. And some people have that innate purity. They just know that something that pulls that hard is not good for them. But not all of us know that, and we have our different areas. For some people, it's alcohol and drugs. For others, it's sex. For others, it's power. It's all kinds of things that will take hold of you. And if you let it, it will draw you completely into its power. And when it does, you really have to exercise your will and your desire nature to pull yourself out of it. And there are others who will begin to go down that path, a path away from God and Guru. And when they do, they will begin to justify their actions. Well, the Guru is not what they're supposed to be. Oh, that's something that I used to do. It's all in the past sense. And suddenly, it feels like a very distant notion. This is the veil of avidya. It is the ignorance that comes over you. On the cosmic delusion side, it's called maya. And it is that part that separates you from God. When we were driving down here, there was clouds and in the beginning, and then there was a sunbreak. And it seemed like the sun just appeared, where before it had disappeared, and we drove a little further, and there were clouds again, and the sun disappeared. And from our perspective, it seems that the sun is shining, and now it's not shining, and now it's shining again, and so on. The truth is, the sun is always shining. This earth couldn't exist even for a moment without the power of the sun. But it appears that it is now present and now it is gone. And then it is present again. And that is the way that it is with God. God is constantly shining. His presence is constantly with us. But the veil, the clouds of Maya, come down and they appear to separate us from God. The truth is, we're never even separated from God because we couldn't move a muscle. We couldn't think a thought. We could not have our being if the power of God were not constantly flowing to us. But how many people recognize and acknowledge this? Even people who seem to worship God, God is a distant prospect. God is out in a heaven somewhere. And you pray to a God and you hope that some distant power or force will come into your life and help you in some manner. But this is a great separation from God as well. How many come to that point, as Papa talked about, where you recognize that there is one but one single power, and it pervades the entire universe, and it is also what causes you to be able to move and to think and to have your being? This is the greatest and the highest realization, to acknowledge that God is both within and without, and there is but one power. And so on, someone may well ask, well, how is there evil then? How is there this appearance that God is not equally present all through his creation? And the answer, once again, is that power of Maya that seems to separate man and creation from God. And so it is our task to be able to remove that. So Krishna goes on here with Uddhava. Uddhava said, O Lord, even though I am hearing your discourse, I am unable to decide whether I should really abandon all activity or not, and therefore I am bewildered. The all-merciful Lord replied, The Supreme Being, who gives life to all, is self-evident. He reveals himself in the six spiritual centers existing in the human body, having first entered the Muladhara chakra, the center located near the anus, as Para, or the Supreme. He assumes the subtle forms composed of the mind stuff and known by the name of Pushyant and Manipura chakra and Madhyama in the Visuddha chakra. He finally manifests himself in the mouth in the grossest form known as Vakani, speech. Fire existing unmanifest in the form of heat in the sky appears in a minute as a spark when being repeatedly churned with force out of a block of wood. Fanned by the wind, grows larger in the course of time and blazes forth when oblations are poured into it. So also I appear by degrees as speech, para, pushante, madhyama, and vakara. Likewise, all the functions of the body, just as articulation, movements of the hands, locomotion, perceiving smell, taste, touch, and audition, and self-identification with the body, etc., are all manifestations. God, the life-giver of all, is indeed one and unmanifest. He is the first to become the support of three gunas. By purposely using his power, Maya, he appears manifold, as it were. The universe is no other than God, in whom it stands woven, warp and woof, like a piece of cloth which owes his existence to the expanse of threads. Threads exist even independently of the cloth, but not so the cloth. So also the universe, owes its existence to God, but God exists even independently of the universe. This is a magnificent vision that's being brought forward, because God exists as pure, as perfect, beyond all existence, unaffected by duality. And then he takes his threads of opposites, of high and low, light and darkness, and he weaves out this fabric of the universe. Now, the universe cannot exist without the threads of life force that is going all the way through. But the threads of life force can exist independently of the fabric. And so it is in consciousness that you can go into deep meditation, and you are lifted up, and in that state of consciousness, you perceive yourself as not affected by anything of this creation. It is a perfect, pure peace, equanimity. There is no disturbance whatsoever in that plane of consciousness. And then those threads go out in consciousness, and you open these two eyes and you see out into this universe. And when you do, you see that magic weave of God stuff as penetrating and going throughout all creation. Just imagine a world in which you exist, in which you can at will draw your consciousness up into the divine state at the seventh chakra at the top of the head. And you exist in that purity, that perfection. And then you can just as easily direct the life force, God's life force, down through the five senses and through the 10 principles of the mind and the mind as the knower of those 10 principles. And everything manifests in this world. But it's all made up of God's stuff. You are not living now in a level of separation, because separation causes suffering. Separation causes suffering. And all of our suffering is due to the ignorance that it is God alone who manifests in you, as you, through you, and manifests in and as and through this entire universe. And so there is but one substratum, and when you recognize that, then you can say, the world is God, all is God, I am He, with all truth, with all perfection within your own divine being. We have these wonderful verses from Jesus that we were studying in our last lesson. And he's speaking from this highest consciousness. And he's speaking to, it's interesting because in the Bible verses, it labels them as Jews. But, they would have all been Jews at that time. Jesus was Jewish and all of his disciples were Jewish. So that's obviously somebody who was writing from some distant time when they could say, oh, he was speaking to the Jews because they were all there. But Jesus is talking to these Pharisees. And these are high-minded. They are people who should know these truths. They are the ministers of the day. They are the priests of the day. They talk as if they know the truth. And yet they're finding fault with Jesus. They're not recognizing the truth in him. And it's one thing that you realize, that when you know and you feel the truth within yourself, you can know it and feel it within somebody else's speech. And even if they speak another language, even if they come from a different religion, it makes no difference whatsoever. You can recognize a lover of God. And you may not understand all of his speech, but you know, as Nicodemus knew, who was a Pharisee, I believe, or a Sadducee, I don't remember which. He's part of the Sanhedrin. And I think that made him a Sadducee. But nevertheless, he recognized in Jesus a higher power. And he wasn't willing to dismiss him. He didn't get angry at him. He may not have understood everything that he was saying. But Jesus spoke the highest truth, and he didn't bother to explain himself many times. He just assumed, if you are attuned to this higher truth, to the higher resonance of vibration from which he spoke, you will at least be interested. You'll recognize the kindred spirit. you'll recognize another lover of God. And if his speech confounds you, if you get angry about it, if you want to condemn him, you're no lover of God. Now, that's a lot of confidence to have in yourself, but it's based on your own experience because you feel God so greatly within yourself. You feel him and know that he is speaking through you, that you'll know that whoever hears you and is also a lover of God should just as easily recognize that same power, even as he would in another person, and as the one man who approached him and he asked about the greatest commandment, and to love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, power, and soul, and thy neighbor as thyself. And he said, you are not far from the kingdom. Because he recognized this man spoke from his heart, from his soul, from the truth that he was realizing. He hadn't gotten the whole thing yet, but he was very near to it. Now this flies in the face of death as being that time when you enter into heaven, or that you actually have to die, your body goes into a hole in the ground, and sometime later your bones are resurrected, and then you enter perhaps into a heavenly state of consciousness or into a heavenly realm. Jesus clearly was acknowledged, this is a state of consciousness. This is not a place that you go to. And it's not some place that you go to when you die. Not in a human sense. It's when the human ego dies. It's so clear in these words how he is speaking to all of this, and yet he is misunderstood by the world even today. But the Pharisees therefore said unto him, thou bearest record of thyself, thy record is not true. This is a principle that they used at the time, that somebody else had to acknowledge the truth that you said. Jesus answered and said unto them, though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true. For I know whence I came and whither I go, but you cannot tell whence I come and whither I go. Ye judge after the flesh, I judge no man. Think of the confidence, think of the realization and the realized state that he has come into, where he can face down these other people and speak with that kind of authority. It's tremendous, really. It's powerful. And he continues, and yet if I judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am the one that bears witness of myself, and the Father that sent me beareth witness of me. Then they said unto him, where is thy Father? Jesus answered, neither know me nor my Father. If you had known me, you would know my Father. This is a great blasphemy in terms of the thought of the day, that I and my Father are one. He's equating himself in oneness with God. Jesus came to bring this tremendous idea into the conscious mind of the Western world. It was something that was known in the Eastern world already. It's not always practiced, and it's not always known in its truth and reality. But there are always those great, highly realized beings of the East of India where this has been acknowledged and known, that you may gain oneness with God. Now, Jesus did not bring this as a message, I am the only one. Not at all. He is saying that you may attain that too. Because then these words spake Jesus in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no man laid hands on him, for his hour had not yet come. Then Jesus said again unto them, I go my way, and ye shall seek me, and shall die in your sins. Whither I go, you cannot come. Sin, in this case, is ignorance. And so you're going to die in ignorance. You live in ignorance, you'll die in ignorance. I am in a state of realization. And in that, you cannot come where I come. You have to pay the pearl of great price. And you have to attain to that. And you've not even put your footsteps on that path. How can you think that you can rise up into my state of consciousness? And so Jesus is speaking to them from this high state. It's wonderful. Then the Jews said, will he kill himself because he saith, whether I go, you cannot come? This indicates the stage of their consciousness. Well, you kill yourself, it's a physical thing. You can't go into that unless you die. But he's not speaking of that kind of death. And he said unto them, ye are from beneath, I am from above. Ye are from this world, I am not of this world. I said therefore unto you that ye shall die in your sins, for if ye believe not that I am he, ye shall die in your sins. Now he's not condemning people, he's just simply stating a fact, that you live in ignorance and you don't even question your ignorance. And here I am, I have realized this God within me, and you don't see it, you don't acknowledge it, you're not open to it in any way. Therefore, there is very little hope for you that in this lifetime you will have that state of realization. Therefore, you will die in ignorance. I live in the state of high realization. Then they said unto him, who art thou? And Jesus saith unto them, even the same as I said to you from the beginning. I have many things to say to judge of you, but he that sent me is true, and I speak to the world those things which I have heard of him. They understood not that he spake to them of the Father. Then Jesus said unto them, when ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall you know that I am he. Just think of this. Now he's talking about lifting up the Son of Man. That is transforming this human ego into the divine realization. And then you will know the truth of what I have spoken here today. It's just as plain can be. How can you understand any of these words in any other way? He is saying that all of them have that capacity to lift up the Son of Man and to realize what he has realized, to know what he has known, to become as he is. And then they shall know the truth. There are those who follow with Master, and they will, some of the nuns, and they answer phone banks, and they say, well, they're not in the state of realization of Master, but they answer questions that people have in Master's name. You can't have it both ways. Either you have Master's state of realization, the same degree of realization. How else could you perfectly know and attune yourself to Master unless you had paid that pearl of great price and you are in that same state? You are acting as a guru, and you are saying that Master is the only guru. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. If God is asking you to teach, to be as a guru, then you have to first earn that, and then you have to manifest it. And why this double talk? Why say Master is the only guru and there's none after him? That means that whoever follows Master will never be a teacher, will never be a guru. What did he come for? Was it to set himself up as the one and only one? It's replicating exactly what many early Christians did with Jesus. And it just will not fly. It doesn't stand the test of reason or of truth. It is time that we begin to really wake up. This world desperately needs beings of realization, those who can lift their consciousness up, those who have lifted up the Son of Man and have stepped into the state of realization and then let that light shine. In realization, there is no jealousy because there is no limitation. Why should not one rejoice at the accomplishment of another? It's only the human ego that gets into this kind of comparison and this kind of jealousy and this kind of nitpicking and bickering that goes on. We should be better than that. We should rise above that. Let us put our minds completely and fully upon God and no longer remain in this human state only. God is constantly pouring through you. If you will only acknowledge it and see it in your own mind, God is not far from you. Do not make him so. When you move, feel that God is walking through you. When you think, constantly think that God is thinking through you. When you move your arms, your hands, everything. When you speak, feel that God is speaking through you. Now, in the beginning, that can be a mental practice, but then you'll get hints of it. You'll get the actual experience of it. And it will lift you up beyond yourself, and you'll know absolutely in that moment that God is using you, that you're not operating out of your normal state of consciousness. And this is a wonderful, it's a blissful, it's a perfect form of communication and existence in God. Now is your time. Now is your time. If not now, then when? Then when? But do not make it an onerous thing. It's true, it's a pearl of great price. It's true that we must be willing to surrender and to go through whatever it is that God deems fit in order to perfect us, in order to purify us, in order to make us perfect in Him. That is true. And what we have to go through, we don't know. We don't know. Everybody thinks that, well, if a test comes along, I'll be able to pass that with flying colors. But tests come along and you can't anticipate them. They come from unexpected directions. And suddenly it catches you, and it's the one thing. It's the one thing in this world that you could not have anticipated. And so it tests you, and it can be a simple thing in many cases. But it's not so simple when you go inside and you realize what a powerful notion this is that has taken hold of you. You must be willing to fight for God. You must be willing to keep your mind on Him, surrender to Him. Even if your mind does not understand, even if it is confused, you constantly turn it to Him. Even if you are assaulted by desire nature, as in never before, you must stand fast. And if you make a mistake, you must self-correct and get right back onto the path again. I say these things because God speaks them through me, because you must hear them. And I repeat them many times because these are things that must become embedded into the mind, into the consciousness, all the way through until every cell of your being knows the truth of it. I feel the power of God going through these words. That is not an egotistical thing to say. It's just simply true. I feel it. I feel it with every cell of my being. And when I speak before you, I have no idea what I'm going to say. I have a Bible verse ready or some reading ready. But I really don't know. And sometimes God will give me an entire talk going through my mind that morning. And I think, oh, I know what God's going to talk about this morning. And then He gives an entirely different one when I get up to talk. And it's really amazing. It really is. And I love it because I'm serving God and Guru. Mother asked me to do this work. And I don't know where it'll go to or what will it affect. I only know that she asked me to do it. I only know that it fulfills something of God in me to be able to do it. But I can tell you with all truth, for all those who rise up in God consciousness and they tell me about it, or I see it in them, in their faces, their eyes, that is the greatest thing for me. Whether it is one or two or thousands or millions or billions, in one sense it makes no difference. If there is one who goes all the way, there could be no greater thrill. But if there are tens, if there are thousands, if there are millions, that's all right too. And this world will come to a certain tipping point, you know, when a certain percentage of dedicated souls, and it doesn't have to be the majority, not by a long shot, it can be a very dedicated minority, and they really pick up the torch and they start going towards God and they start to realize the results. See, it's not just saying that we're practicing. It's not just saying that we're on the path. We need to be getting the results. We need to be feeling God. We need to be uplifted. We need to feel His bliss, His joy, His peace. And if we're not getting that, we're not making the progress. And it's not that we get it every moment, because sometimes we're taken through deserts and it's difficult, but we're striving, we're striving, we're always striving. And as the great master Lhari Maharshi said, striving, 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 one day behold the goal. That's how we get there. That's how Papa said it as well. But as a dedicated minority rises up, this world will change. Can you imagine living in a world where it is quite cool? It's the thing to do, to be on your spiritual path, to be doing good works for your fellow man. It's just what everybody wants to do. It's what television shows are about. It's what everything's oriented to. Realizing God, serving your fellow man. Imagine living in such a world, how we could transform this world into a Garden of Eden. It is not that far from us. It may seem very, very far. But as God showed me in a vision one time, that this grace could sweep around the world like a conflagration, and suddenly the hearts and minds of individuals everywhere would be uplifted, inspired, transformed. It really can happen. And first and foremost, it must happen within us, each one of us individually. This world is made up of individuals. And that's the only way this transformation. Many people think, well, if Jesus, if he comes back to earth and he kicks butt and takes names, he'll straighten things out. And other people think, some great being's going to come to earth and he'll straighten things out. It's always this outside force who's straightening out other people. But it's something that works from the bottom up, not from the top down. It's something that individuals suddenly get inspired to change their lives. They do the hard work to get there. To remember God when all the world, rest of the world, is running after everything of the world. And they do the hard work, and that's how this world changes. One person at a time. So let us imbibe these words deeply. Let us take in Papa's teachings. Surrender to God. Aspire for him with such great intensity that he comes in and he transforms you through and through. We must choose, that is true. As long as there is any sense of I must choose God. Mother taught the most amazing thing one time. I remember being shocked by it. I'm not sure I was. And she said, in my highest state, this highest state of realization, I have never lost my individual will. I could still choose to go against God's will. I would just never choose to do that. There's no longer, and this is me, not her, speaking, there's no longer any down-pulling force in her that would take her in that direction of choosing against God. It just would never occur to her to do anything other than what God wants her to do. But that she still could. She still had that individual will. I think many times we think if we enter into a state of God realization, we lose our individual sense. We lose our individual will. Not so. Not so. So let us choose God. Daily, hourly, moment by moment. And feel his uplifting power and bliss. Keeping company with the Guru is not just always being in the physical presence. It's always thinking about your Guru. It's always merging your being into the Guru's being, because the Guru is one with God. I remember when I was in North Africa, and I was thinking about Mother, and then suddenly, I was out in the middle of the Sahara. I mean, literally in the middle. There is nothing but sand dunes in every direction. And the truck had stopped for some time, and I was thinking of Mother, and suddenly I smelled her perfume. And I thought, even here, Mother, here you are. There's no limit to where you are, to your omniscience and omnipresence. And it is the truth that in God they are universal. And even as God is conscious of his entire self as all creation, so can any one of his attuned ones those great perfected masters, they are also universally aware. It doesn't mean that in their conscious minds, they're perhaps always aware of everything. But in that God consciousness, they can become aware of anything or anyone. And they can feel someone calling to them, praying to them. And their grace goes out to that one, because they and their Father are not different. They are merged and have become as one. It is the most tremendous potentiality. And yet, what do we do with our days and our nights and our thoughts and our decision-making power? Do we put God first? So let us pray. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. Surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. Heavenly Lord, within you, manifesting as you.